one of the things Chad mentioned in his remarks about Ruby in prayer was to pray for her to go on if she can't get better. I know throughout my ordeal with Jane, several people told me that was their prayer for her. I understand. But when someone is ready to go home to the Father, that's the best thing we can pray for them. In the reading in Luke chapter 23, describing some of the scenes taking place there right before the crucifixion of Christ, it seems strange that our subject for this morning would be a part of that, but not directly name that. But in that reading, in verse 34 of Luke 23, Jesus was saying, "Father, forgive them, they know not what they do." And they cast lots, dividing up his garments among themselves. Casting of lots was a form of taking a chance or gambling. Now, we don't know what they were going to do with those garments. Presumably, if they were like some of the opportunists of today, they would somehow maybe reason that, you know, that might be something to hang on to. Who knows what that might be worth someday. That's what people do today. They try to get a hold of sometimes the most grotesque things to hang on to in the idea that, well, someday it might be worthwhile. And so I don't know exactly what their motivation was, but that's what they did. Our subject this morning, gambling. That might seem like a strange subject for a sermon, but by the time it's over, I think you will agree that it is a biblical subject. It's a subject that we need to talk about, and maybe we don't talk about it a lot. I think it's because we believe that most Christians understand what is wrong with gambling. And it's like a lot of other subjects. I'm afraid sometimes we make that assumption when in fact it's not always true. It may be that someone has been tempted to gamble and doesn't quite understand what's wrong with it, maybe because they've never considered the subject. So we need to educate people who might be in that category. Lots of gambling goes on, which seems to be harmless. We'll bring up some of that a little bit later on. I would suggest to you that it's not a new form of sin. A gambling board was discovered on the island of Crete that dated back to 1800 to 1900 BC. So for them to be casting lots over Jesus' garment as just prior to his crucifixion, you see, that goes back a lot further than that. Children in Rome, it is said, played heads and tails. Well, we've all probably done that. Heads you win, tails I win, whatever. So there's evidence that this has gone on. Tertullian, around 155 AD when he was born, said, "If you say that you are a Christian when you are a dice player, you say what you are not because you are a partner with the world." You've got to get fired for preaching that in some places. But that's what he said. And again, that's 155 AD. So this form of sin is not new by any stretch of the imagination. It's been around a long time. What has happened in my lifetime, which now has several decades to it, is that it has become a little bit more fashionable. There was a time that I can remember when gamblers were put in a category with other people that were kind of looked down upon because of their choice of activity. Drinking alcoholic beverages used to be in the same category, especially those who would drink to excess. Now it's glorified. Got to let go. Got to experience all this. part of the reason why it has now become a little bit more acceptable is because it has now been legalized. When things are illegal, they certainly are done quite a bit in the shadows. But once government comes out and legalizes it, then some of the stigma is removed from the very same thing that just prior to that was looked down upon by society. And I would say to you something you understand. Just because something is legal does not make it moral or correct for people to do. Lotteries are now in 45 states, the District of Columbia, and three territories of the U.S. So as you can see, there's only five states that don't have one. Can't remember exactly which ones they are now. Some of them southern states, primarily, I think. And now, of course, the lottery is all connected somehow. I'm not totally familiar with it, but I know that there's a certain thing that no matter what state you live in, you can buy your tickets for that. So it's got a huge jackpot to it. Lottery is one of the worst things that ever happened to poor people. If you were to get in line to buy some lottery tickets, I can pretty well guarantee you, you will not find a wealthy person in that line. They know better. They know the odds are against them winning. So the very people that they claim to help with the income from these lotteries are actually the ones subsidizing it and not getting any better off financially for it. So that's another lie. Of course, they also told us, look how much more money we'll have for the schools. Well, if that's the case, why are the schools always continuously needing money? Where's that lottery money going? Good question. The first $1 million winner in Florida was a member of the church. I personally knew the man who won the first lottery drawing, the largest one up to that time in the state of Illinois. Now, this goes way back several years. It was only a matter of $15,000 or $20,000. He was a member of the church in Pekin, where I grew up. Don't think that didn't create a stir. More of a stir because that prize was given away at the state fair by the governor at that time, Governor Thompson, presented the check to this man. How would you like to be on television before the world, and but more specifically before your brother and sisters in Christ? You might have been watching the newscast, and there you are receiving a check from the governor as a big lottery winner. That was quite a mess there for a while. As many as 49% of adults view casinos favorably. Yeah, they're great. Good source of entertainment and all that kind of stuff. So it's a problem. What is gambling? Webster says it's to play a game for money or property, to bet on the uncertain outcome. Keep in mind that, particularly that last phrase, an uncertain outcome. To play games of chance for money or other valuable stakes, to gamble at cards, to gamble on the result of a race. Now notice we had the word outcome in that first definition and now result. Because there are some things that people will try to come back and say, well, that's just as much gambling as what you're talking about. We'll explain the difference. World Book Encyclopedia, gambling is betting on the outcome, there's that word again, betting on the outcome of a future event. Gamblers usually bet money or something else of value as a stake on the outcome they predict. Well, there's that word outcome again. Must be important to the concept of gambling, huh? When the outcome is settled, the winner collects the loser's stake. That's the idea, isn't it? If I gamble, I want to win. And I want you to lose. We'll talk more about that, but just think of that. Would you as a Christian want to be in that position to where you are hoping that you'll come out with some money But the only way that happens is everybody else loses what they put into it. Is that something a Christian should want to have on their mind? I hope not. There are three key elements to gambling. First of all, there's some kind of uncertain event, arbitrarily determined. In other words, you can gamble on just about anything. But it's the uncertainty of the event that you're actually looking at. And you're going to lay down money or something of value on one side or the other. You either believe that event is going to happen or it's not going to happen. That's the first thing you have to have for it to be gambling. Next, there is a stake or a wager, a bet, that is deliberately chanced. In other words, you are deliberately taking your money and putting it down, and with respect to some uncertain event, you are taking one side or the other on that. It is either going to happen or is not going to happen. You don't know. You can't bet on a certain event, only on an uncertain event. I remember this joke about a fellow told this other guy next to him, said, we were watching a game of some kind on television. And he said to the fellow, want to place a bet on that? Yeah, I'll take your bet on that. The game ended. The guy started to pay out his money. And the other fellow says, I can't take your money. He said, I knew that game was a replay. It was played earlier. That's just a replay of the game. The other guy said, well, yeah, I know that. I didn't think they'd lose twice in a row. But so you got a wager that you're putting on something, and you're taking a chance that what you are predicting about is going to be right. Then, of course, there's winners and losers, usually just a winner and losers. And again, would a Christian want to be in the category of saying, well, I'm a winner? Because that's an admission that all the others are losers. That you have taken what they had in order to benefit from it yourself. So there's just some basic ideas about gambling. Now, as I said, there are some people who will say, well, if it's wrong to bet on a horse or to bet on the outcome of a game of some kind, then that's no different than taking a risk like crossing the street. I mean, you might get hit, you might not. So that's gambling, isn't it? No. Not unless you wager on the outcome. If you tell someone, I'll bet you $50 I can walk across that street without getting hit in the midst of heavy traffic, now you've turned it into gambling. But just the risk-taking itself is not gambling, because it doesn't have all those essential features of gambling. We take risks every day. Not the same as gambling. Someone says, well, farming, that's gambling. That farmer's taking a risk. He may gain or he may lose. Again, just like in crossing the street, it's not gambling to take a risk unless you are wagering something on the outcome of that. Now, if you enter into an arrangement with your neighbor down the road and says, I'll bet you that I'm going to have a bigger crop than you are this year, let's put some money on it. Now we're into gambling because we're wagering on the outcome of that. But just simply taking a risk is not gambling. Another one, buying or selling stock. They say, well, that's a gamble. No, that's taking a risk. That stock may go up in value. It may go down in value. And again, it's not gambling unless you take a bet on the direction. Now, I'm not familiar enough with the stock market to explain how that could happen, but I know that something you can do. When you wager something on whether it's going to rise or it's going to drop, now then you're getting into gambling. But just simply buying stock, sharing the risk that everybody else has that has bought that same stock, is not gambling. Not until you add another element there. Because after all, that stock is either going to become more valuable or less valuable. You are going to gain the value of that if it gains in value, but so will everybody else. And if that value goes down, you're going to lose money. But everybody loses, because that's sharing a risk. Again, it's not until you add that other element in there and bet on the direction of it that you're getting into some gambling. Buying life insurance. Well, that's gambling. No, that's not gambling. You don't know the future, and if you end up living, that's good. If not, your family will spend the money that you put out and the value of that life insurance. But again, both people involved in that gain something from it. The seller, the life insurance companies, you may think they gain too much from it, but the fact is, they're gaining, and you won't exactly gain from it, but your family will in the event of your death. Now again, you could add some kind of a wager in on that, I guess, and turn it into gambling, but just simply buying life insurance is not gambling. Accepting a prize for something, not gambling. I never was very good at entering contests and winning anything. Jane and I won a cake one time. Kroger ran this deal years and years ago. Just put your name in here, and if we draw it, you get a cake. Well, I didn't put any money down on it. I didn't wager anything to get it. Only got, I did win a lottery one time. I have to confess this. It was a draft lottery. I got a low number. I didn't want to win that one, but I won that one anyway. That's the only lottery I ever got into, and I was not given a choice about whether to get in that one. And gambling is not determined by the amount of money involved. Now, some people seem to think, well, yeah, going to Las Vegas and spending hundreds and thousands of dollars, yeah, that's gambling. That's wrong. But they think that other forms of gambling are rather harmless because of not being very much money involved. Maybe flipping somebody at work for coke, heads or tails, you buy, I'll buy. Buying a lottery ticket, that seems to be harmless fun, but you can gamble without ever going to Las Vegas or to a riverboat casino. Now, it takes on a lot of different forms. Some, as I said, seem like harmless fun, flipping for cokes, buying a lottery ticket. Card games that involves, like poker, that involve money or other things of value, gambling, raffles, and some bingo games are gambling. Again, that particular idea of wagering some money on the outcome is a key thing that turns what might be a harmless thing into something that's gambling. I suppose most of us, one time or another, have played bingo. You get the thrill of being the first one to fill up your card, and then you dump that off and play another game. Nobody's won any money, nobody's lost any money, because nothing was wagered. So just playing bingo, not gambling. Entering a drawing, as I said a while ago, for a cake, just putting your name in the hat, some person is drawn. I haven't wagered that I'm going to be the one. I haven't put myself in a position of hoping everybody else loses some money on that deal. Nothing was wagered. Now, here we go again. Got this problem again. What's wrong with it? What are some of the principles that we need to consider? Well, poor stewardship. As I mentioned, if you get in line and buy a lottery ticket, you'll probably not find a millionaire in that line. or anyone that makes a substantial amount of money, because they know that the odds are you're not going to win. You're going to lose. So they don't get involved in it. So it ends up being, because the number of people who lose is much greater than the number of people who win, you end up being a poor steward of what God has blessed you with. Back in chapter 12 of Luke, verse 42 to 48, that's the parable where the master puts people in charge. And then he comes back and he wants an accounting of how well they have done. How things are going. How did that steward perform? If the slave says, "My master will be a long time in coming," and begins to beat the slave, both men and women, and eat and drink and get drunk, verse 46, the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, and an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. That slave who knew his master's will did not get ready or act in accord with his will will receive many lashes. The one who did not know it, committed deeds worthy of a flogging, will receive but few. From everyone who has given much, much will be required. To whom they entrusted much, of him they will ask all the more. We've got to be good stewards of what we are given, so we don't go around throwing away our money on things that we know in the long haul we're going to lose. I've stood in line before where they've people in front of me are buying lottery tickets because there'd be only one line. It's real nice when they got a separate line, but sometimes they don't. And I see these people are getting ready to buy their lottery tickets. And once in a while, when they look like a friendly face, I say, "You know, I just think I've probably won more money on that than you have." "Really?" "Yeah." And I said, "I've never played." I try to get them gently to realize, if you really add up, okay, put one column over here, here's what you won. Over here, look how much you got, or you didn't win anything. At the end of the day, most people are going to end up spending a whole lot more than they ever make on lottery. We're not good stewards of what God has given us. There are more losers than winners. And again, in fact, you enter into that drawing, whatever it is, a lottery, or some other form of gambling, hoping to be a winner and hoping that everybody else loses. That's not a very good way to look at things, is it? That I want other people to be miserable so that I can go away feeling good about it? Is that what God wants us to do with the things that he blesses us with? Shouldn't we be more concerned about other people, their welfare, than that? It encourages covetousness. Covetousness is a sin. In Luke 12, verse 15, remember that's where Jesus talked about that farmer. Got all concerned about his crops. What's he going to do? He's doing so well that he didn't know how he's going to handle this situation here. His land was very productive, verse 16. "What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?" Now this all got started because, remember, a brother here, he said, "Tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." So this man was willing to destroy the relationship he had with his brother over money. And that's why in verse 15, Jesus said to him, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." Every form of greed or covetousness. And Paul said in Colossians 3 and verse 5, covetousness is idolatry. We don't normally think of it that way. But when our goal is to accumulate money and thereby have the ability to buy the things that money can buy, covetousness. Particularly when that man was wanting, he said, in essence, "Make my brother divide it equally," but it makes you wonder just exactly how he wanted that money to be divided up. But he needed to learn the lesson. Listen, what you got right there, that's not what life is all about. We need to learn to depend on God. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, it's made very clear about our trust, and that it should not be in earthly things, but should rather be in the Lord, in God, in our Heavenly Father, who is going to provide for us. Verses 5 and 6. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me? Being content with what you have. I've jokingly said, I think God allowed mankind to invent computers to test us on this very point. You buy a computer, you take it home, turn it on, then you realize, oh, this thing's already outdated. They probably got a faster one back at the store. So you go and get another one. Can't keep up with it. Being content. Most of us are on our fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth computer, whatever it is. And we find reasons that other one's just not working right. It's not fast enough. It's not this, it's not that. I'm just joking about it, of course, but it does make the point, I think. It's hard sometimes to learn to be content with what we have, but we need to work on that. And when gambling takes place, and covetousness is the drive behind it, there are some people who get something for nothing, and others get nothing for something. That's just the way it is. There's going to be a winner, and there's going to be a loser or losers. And that we want them to lose because we want to be the winner. Why should we not rather follow the example of Paul with regard to covetousness? In Acts chapter 20, verses 33 to 35, he said, I have coveted, he's talking to these elders here of the church at Ephesus, as he called them to Miletus. He said, I've coveted no one's silver or gold or clothes. You yourselves know that these hands ministered to my own needs and to the men who were with me. In everything I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he himself said. It's more blessed to give than receive. Is that the motto of a gambler? No, it's like the fellow said, I know it's more blessed to give than receive, but receiving is good enough for me. And that's the way it is with gambling. I'm going to be on the receiving end. All the rest of you folks are going to be on the giving end. You're going to give me your money. I'm going to receive your money. Paul said it's more blessed to give, that is to be in a position to help other people, than to receive. Gamblers want to receive. I want to receive it all. You're going to give your money to me, and I'm going to be glad to take it. That seems to be the reverse of what Paul is trying to get across there with regard to how he was when he was among the Ephesians. So it encourages covetousness. Contrary to the golden rule. Remember what we call the golden rule, Matthew 7:12? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, how would that work in gambling? Well, it won't fit gambling. Again, because in gambling, I don't want my treatment to be the same as the other person's treatment. I want to be the winner. I want them to be the loser. Imagine a guy putting money down at a table where he's gambling and looking across at the other people and saying, I hope you guys win. Think that scenario has ever played out? I doubt it. No, he's looking at them as a means to make himself a little bit wealthier at their expense. He will win, they will lose. There's no way the golden rule can apply to the area of gambling. It just can't. We're not looking out for the best interest of others if we engage in this. Because they're going to get nothing out of it. Another passage that is a good passage to look at on this, Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. He says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but also for the interests of others. Now, is that what a gambler does? He's looking out for the interest of others. Is that what he wants? Does he enter into that with the idea that I hope they win because I'm really concerned about them? I know they could use this money better than I can, more than I can. I know they don't even think about that. They don't care about the people with whom they're gambling, except to think of them as victims. That is, I'm going to victimize you. You're going to lose to enable me to win. Does that really seem to be in keeping with these principles here? Matthew 7:12, Jesus' words himself, and Paul's words here in Philippians chapter 2, to look out for best interests of others. Is that what a gambler does? No, he's got his own self-interest at heart. Paul mentions that there in verse 4. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests. That's what a gambler is looking out for, his own personal interest. But he says, no, you also look out for the interest of others. It'll destroy your character. You're going to be around people who are not going to be very good influence. The Bible teaches us that we provide for the needs we have in this life through honest labor of one kind or another. And there's plenty of different kinds of it. Paul said here to Titus, our people must also learn to engage in good deeds to meet pressing needs so that they will not be unfruitful. Engaging in good deeds, honest labor. Now, can we truthfully say that gambling is honest labor? That's good? I don't know of anybody that probably would take that proposition up. And look at who you're associating with, particularly if you go off to Las Vegas or places like that. Associating with the wrong kind of people. Gambling is not usually done in isolation to other sins. There's drinking. Probably a certain amount of prostitution is promoted at these gambling places. All kinds of things. Why would a Christian want to be around people like that? Well, we shouldn't. Unless we're going to try to teach them the gospel. I doubt if they would have much time for that in the middle of their gambling. I don't think they'd probably take time out to have a listen to what you have to say about the gospel. So I don't think that's going to be very possible. So it means that you're going to be around people that are not going to be a good influence on you. Not going to help you to cultivate the kind of characteristics you need. It weakens your self-control. One of the things that we are to add to our faith is self-control. In fact, as you look over this long list of things that Peter has here in the first chapter, 2 Peter, none of them seem to me like are going to be promoted in the gambling houses. Starting in verse 5, now for this very reason also, enjoy applying all diligence in your faith, supply moral excellence. And in your moral excellence, knowledge, and in your knowledge, self-control. And in your self-control, perseverance, and in your perseverance, godliness, and in your godliness, brotherly kindness, and in your brotherly kindness, love. For if these qualities are yours and are increasing, they render you neither useless nor unfruitful in the true knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. Are these qualities promoted or hindered by being in a gambling place? Participating in gambling. It's going to really hurt self-control because you, when you lose, your immediate thought is, all right, I'll throw the dice again. Never going to be content. Never going to be satisfied. Your character and your reputation will not be what it ought to be. And that's something a Christian has to think about. Gambling makes an awful lot of people miserable. They go thousands and thousands of dollars into debt. Some of them, believing they can never recover from that debt, take their own life. Or they turn to alcohol, to drugs, to other crimes to support their gambling. It's a sin which will condemn us. Now again, society has deemed things like gambling to be an addiction. And that's real convenient for psychologists because now they can get paid money by insurance companies. The insurance companies have to pay it because the government says it's an addiction. That person can't help it. You have to pay for it. You say, well, that doesn't affect me. Yes, it does. When you buy a product that a business makes, you're helping to pay for that insurance coverage for that man who claims he can't help it when in fact he can. But it's a sin that will condemn people. Let's keep ourselves pure. Let's stay away from this sin and all other sin to the very best of our ability to keep ourselves unspotted from the world. Well, that's all I got to say on the subject this morning. Not going to go away. I don't know what we're matter with this thing today. Appreciate your good attention. It's a subject that I don't talk about very much. I know I haven't presented a lesson on that here. But consider it, because it's very subtle. If the amount isn't very great, someone thinks, what's the harm? It's still gambling. If you're here this morning and not a Christian, we plead with you to consider your soul. All things are ready. If you are, but you've gone back in the world, been involved in maybe this sin or other sins, known to other people, and they also know you, a member of the Lord's church, you need to take care of that. And we give you that opportunity as we stand and sing together.